we will end up with the introduction in Vrindavan, because it seems to be a bit echoey. Yes, thank you. Because Krishna specifically comes to perform his Vrindavan pastimes to attract us, because we're all chasing after the sweetness in a shadow, and we become frustrated in life, and it must happen. We become frustrated in life because the shadow doesn't have substance to it. So Krishna comes to show us what the real substance is. He shows us what the spiritual world is. He shows us the essence of the spiritual world is that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Swayam. And he is there as Purushottam, Lila Purushottam, as the supreme enjoyer. And who does he enjoy with? With his beloved devotees. And this land of Vrindavan is very mysterious. And we'll speak about a little bit of how mysterious it is, but first we'll start at the beginning. We're ready. Now you boys are, unless you have eyes in the back of your head like your teachers do, you have to face that way. And it will have sound coming from there too. Well, curtains. That will help. And that helps quite a lot. That he's all powerful. He allows his friends to tease him. He forgets this. Why? To relish loving reciprocations with his dear most devotees. How can we understand this mysterious mood of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Possible to understand how the Supreme Lord forgets that he's a Supreme Lord? Well, does he really forget that he's a Supreme Lord when his mouth is open? Did you see that picture? The painting? and who knows that pastime? Does anyone know? Where his cowherd boyfriend say, "Oh, Krishna, open your mouth and we'll place inside your mouth a wonderful laddu." So Krishna opens up his mouth and the boys put a flower inside instead. Now, he's unlimited. He knows everything. Sarvagya. Well, when they put a flower in his mouth, did he know in advance that they were going to put a flower in his mouth? No. Well, that doesn't mean yes, no, yes, no. It's quite mysterious, isn't it? Well, is he still the, if he's the Supreme Lord, then he knows. If he's a coward boy, he doesn't know. So, which is he? Well, he's both. But the idea is that when he's in the with his coward boyfriends, to relish the sweetness of the loving exchanges, his consciousness compresses in a way. The Supreme Unlimited Lord's consciousness compresses in a way so that to enjoy the pastimes, he forgets. And yes, when he opens his mouth and the boy, and he's expecting a laddu, he's actually expecting a laddu and he's surprised. And maybe he'll even, when the flower goes in his mouth, and the boys laugh, and what does he do? Huh? He laughs also, yes, because they're just playing, they're boys. They're playing, but this is very mysterious. What an understanding, what a concept of the Supreme Lord, that he's controlled by his devotee's love. It is quite astounding. So how can we understand this? Let's go on and we'll watch a little more after. Well, here's one way we can understand it. Think of a king. Kings are opulent. Crowns and jewels. Golden swords. Kings are powerful. Ishwar above. Kings maintain law and order with their power and their opulence. Citizens only see their king in his palace. Surrounded by his guards, most citizens should only see the king in his royal splendor. Why? Well, why? Why should most citizens only see the king when he's sitting on the throne, surrounded by his guards, with so much opulence, so much power? Why? Raise your hand. Yes. Thank you.
So they don't mistake him as an ordinary person?
No, why? Yes, thank you. So they don't mistake that he's an ordinary person, but why is it important that they don't see him as an ordinary person? Yes.
And lose respect?
Yes, and they lose respect, and what happens if they lose respect? No calling out, otherwise God gave us corners to put the naughty students in. Yes. They won't listen to him. They won't follow his law. And what happens when the citizens don't follow the law? Well, everyone here knows what happens. It's like Bombay traffic and Delhi traffic. Did you ever, in the trains in India, I've spent lots of time on the trains in India, they have so many good laws, but no one follows them. And it's chaos. With all due respect to the Indian train system, it's chaos. If everyone followed the law that says you can't go on there without a ticket, and you can't sit down in a seat unless you have that seat reserved for you, and you can't do this, and you can't light a cigarette or anything like that. If people have no respect for the ruler, they don't follow the laws. And therefore, and then the country, the kingdom becomes chaotic. And everyone suffers so much. So the king must take this position. And people must see the king surrounded by his retinue, by his guards and his power. And if you go to the Red Fort in Delhi, Lal Kila. So you can you walk into the old Dabar of where the king is, and his throne is so high, and you walk in and you have to go like this to, you can imagine him sitting there, you have to go like, turn your chin upwards to see him. Just like we never see the deities on a lower level, because we have to keep respect. So these things are there for respect, to maintain respect, which is so required. Okay, continue. That's why, as you all said. Yet, kings are persons. They have likes and dislikes. They have love, they have children, and they have families. But their intimate dealings must be limited to their palaces' remote and inner chambers. In his inner chambers, the monarch can remove his crown. And in privacy, he can joke and interact with his dear beloveds and intimate friends. There, in his inner chambers, he can act just as he wishes. There, far from the eyes of the common citizens, the king naturally reveals more intimate aspects of his personality. There's one story Srila Prabhupada told about Benjamin Disraeli, who was not a king, but he was the prime minister in England. And one very important dignitary of state came to see him. He had an appointment with Disraeli. Raise your hand if you know this little story. Yeah, everyone knows it, but I'll tell it again anyway. So he kept him waiting after he was on time for the appointment, as you must be on time with an important person for an appointment. And it was 10 minutes late and 15 minutes late, and he went to the secretary because he was also busy, and he said, just a minute, he's very busy, the prime minister is very busy now, very important, soon we'll call for you. Then after a half hour and then an hour, and he still didn't call for him, he's very busy doing something important. So the dignitary who had the appointment and was kept waiting for an hour, he went to the door and he looked in the keyhole, and what did he see? What was the very important thing that Disraeli was doing? Thank you.
He was playing with his grandson.
He was playing with his grandson, and what was he doing? He was on his four. Could you demonstrate? Could you demonstrate how to become like a horse? Go ahead. Yes. Yes. So Disraeli was like that, and his grandson was riding him, and goes, and he was going. And the dignitary was astounded. And the point that Prabhupada made then when he told this story was that this was, this intimate exchange with his grandson was more important to the great prime minister than the meeting of state, which was very official, and the fate of the world was hanging upon it. But he wanted to exchange. Disraeli wanted to have an exchange, an intimate exchange, an exchange of the heart, an exchange of love with his dear and beloved grandson. That's the kind of things that the king can do in his inner quarters. His wife can tease him there, he can tease his wife, but when they're sitting on the throne and the wife is sitting next to him, they can't do that. She can't call him this and call him that. They can't joke. The children can't come in and play and jump around. It's just not the appropriate place to do it. Go ahead. Seeing the king in his inner chambers is not for everyone. Only a rare few may know the king in this intimate way. For only those loyal souls who love him fully are trustworthy enough to enter his private quarters. Otherwise, so here's just one example, and this happens, you see this every once in a while, some very intimate of the royal family. This was the butler. So after some time, after he wasn't in the service anymore, he told what was really going on behind in the inner chambers. And he made lots of money from it. He published a best-selling book, etc., etc. So what's the problem with doing that? Someone who's allowed to see the most intimate activities of the king, of the queen, of the family members, of the royalty, they can't use the information for their own benefit, to make their own profit. It's not appropriate. Because, why? Why isn't it appropriate? Because they've broken a kind of trust. Because they've been allowed to see something very intimate that the ordinary citizens can't see, that the ordinary citizens can't know about. And they've used it for themselves. They've given up their position of being servants. and they've used it for themselves, for their own profit, adoration, and distinction. So, if this is the standard, the proper standard in dealing with kings, what to speak of the qualification and the characteristics and the trustworthiness that is required for one to see the Supreme King in his most intimate, private chambers, where he takes off his crown, so to speak, and just acts as he likes to act with his most intimate, trustworthy devotees. And what is that that makes them trustworthy enough? Completely trustworthy? What is it that makes them completely trustworthy? The extent of their love. They have no tendency. They have no tendency at all to exploit the situation and take anything for themselves out of it, because they are completely captivated by love for Krishna. As access to the inner chambers of earthly kings must be restricted to the most trustworthy, so also, and still more restricted, must be access to the inner private quarters of Krishna, the Parameshwara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As ordinary citizens of a kingdom should perceive the king's power, but not his personality, the ordinary citizens in God's realm will naturally also perceive his power, but will have little idea of his personality. To ordinary citizens, he may appear faceless, vague, impersonal, or even void. They call this the face of God. I think Photoshop had something to do with it too, but only to those who are fully trusted and fully devoted to him will the Supreme Lord reveal his nature, his full nature and personality. Full personality. By the mercy of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, readers and hearers of the Bhagavatam's 10th canto are granted a glimpse of Sri Vrindavan Dham, the mysterious private quarters of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, that was the end of part one. Anyone have any questions or comments? Not even one question, not even one comment. Yes.
Just as Mr. Butler had misused his situation in British royal family, today we find professional Bhagavatam reciters try to exploit the 10th canto of Bhagavatam for their personal benefit.
Yes. But the one difference is that really they haven't been granted entrance into the inner quarters. Because Krishna is very restrictive. And that's what the process of devotional service is to refine our consciousness to purify and refine our consciousness in such a way that really, really, we want nothing other than access to the service of Krishna. So first, it starts with just surrender and becoming a servant, and that gradually becomes purified through the stages of Shraddha, Nishtha, and Ruchi, and Ashakti, Bhava, Prema. And then when one is on the highest stages of Prema, then one can get in. Yes, but you're correct. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
If that access is supposed to be restricted to most people, then why did Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada decide to spread it all over the world to everybody if it's something that isn't
and Sukadeva Goswami has put it in, and Srila Vyasadeva in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So one aspect of that is before the 10th canto, what cantos are there? What canto is right before the 10th canto? 9th, and before that? Before that? You can count backwards, even while facing me. That's very good. Usually people count backwards. You say, can you count backwards? And they turn around and start counting forwards. What canto is before the 4th canto? Wow. There's an IT man blossoming later on. So there are 9 cantos before we really deal with the 10th canto. And when Prabhupada put out the Krishna book and told the devotees to he wanted 100,000 copies, like in the first printing practically, or the later printings. But there are purports mixed in there that make everything clearer. But also, why did Krishna come and display these things? And the answer is, as the purports explain, is that we need to become attracted to that realm. Otherwise, this realm, the realm of the reflection, if we think this is all in all, we just remain here. So we need to become attracted, and we need to know where the goal is, where we're going. But yet, we should be careful enough to tread the ground which is appropriate for us according to who we are and what our standing is. And as Prabhupada often said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave what to the people in general? The chanting of Krishna's holy name, which cleanses the heart, and it also, Shriya Karaiva Chandrika Vataranam, it is the moonlight, the moonbeams that causes the white lily of one's spiritual life to blossom. And then Bhagavad Gita, and then Bhagavatam, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So as Prabhupada also said, he would speak about the most intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna Mahaprabhu only with Ramananda Roy, Srip Damodar, Sikhi Mahiti. Good point, good question. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
How do we understand in this context the devotees of Vaikuntha planet? They are also all very pure, only then they have got entrance to Vaikuntha, but still they don't get entrance to Goloka Vrindavan. So in this context, they are also trustworthy, but in this context, how do we understand that?
Well, let me just. It's a very big problem for religionists, not materialists, but just religionists. What happens when you succeed? You go to heaven, so to speak. What happens? What do you do there? So most religionists seem to be, or spiritualists, turn out impersonalists. Practically speaking, that you just lose the suffering of material life. And then I made a little list of four different stages here. And what is the spiritual world like? What is heaven like? What goes on there? Is God there, the Supreme Lord, the Parameshwar there, and his only job is to listen to everyone's prayers and complaints, and give me this and give me that? There's one story that I heard about one sadhu who used to live in he was a yogi, and he lived in a trunk. And then only on the Purnima, and he wouldn't eat anything, and on the Purnima he would come out. Once a month he would come out. And the people wanted to see him at that time. So on the Purnima everyone in the village would come out to ask him for blessings or ask him questions or something like that. So the Purnima came and there was a long line, and they opened up the trunk and he came out, and the first person said, my son's not doing well in college, could you bless him so he passes his examination? And he went, and closed the box. So is that what God is? That he's just, people go to the temples and their prayer and please do this for me and please do that and please do this and please do that and have this problem and this problem for eternity? He just listens to people's problems and their requests according to what they desire? Well, that's not what the spiritual world is like. It's not nothing and it's not that. And then there's people who think that the spiritual world is more or less like here, heaven, but with no, you don't have to go to work. Someone told me another joke recently. It's not that there is this pious couple, they died, both of them, husband and wife died, and they went to heaven. And he got to heaven and he saw that you could, this is really, the weather is perfect, and when you go up to play golf, you don't have to pay anything, and your ball never goes into the water traps or to the sand traps, and what, you pick the right club every time, and the ball always goes into the hole. And he thought, this is wonderful. And he turned to his wife and said, if you didn't feed me all those vitamin pills and tofu burgers, we would have been here years ago. So is that what heaven is like? Is that what the spiritual world is like? No credit cards, your car never runs out of petrol, no taxes, and etc., etc., etc. And when you take examinations, you always get everyone gets the top grade. And your boss is very submissive to you. And he always gives you day offs and a raise, and he takes prasadam. What's the spiritual world like? It's not like the material world in that sense at all. But rather, Krishna is the center. And it's not even the reverential spiritual world, which is wonderful. But the reverential aspect of the spiritual world, where people are fully sincere and fully pure, it's like the king sitting on the throne. And everyone is coming in and worshipping him. But yet, it is even more intimate than that. Where, rather than his power and potency is dominating, but rather his sweetness dominates. And he's in the center of it. And the devotees are only simply doing what is pleasing to him. So we'll be talking about this topic of what's pleasing to Krishna, and it's quite amazing and mysterious. And why this is presented also is because we should understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he's in his personality, and when we understand more about his personality, he becomes still more attractive to us, because the relationship with him and his dear ones is what we've all been looking for. Okay, why don't we go on to part two, which is about to begin. This is the Supreme King. Who is the Supreme King? That's Krishna. In his private quarters. This is part two. Introduction. As a king is powerful in his kingdom, Krishna is all-powerful throughout the entirety of existence. Go on. But what does the Supreme Lord do in the intimate privacy of his innermost chambers? Quite mysterious. What does he do? Uh-oh. He's caught. The all-powerful Supreme Lord is stealing butter. And he's feeding it to the monkey. And then his mother chastises him. She chases him, and he becomes afraid. And he begins to cry. And then his mother punishes him. She ties him up to a wooden grinding mortar. Now, these are the kind of activities that the unlimitedly supreme, mysterious, powerful Lord performs in the land of Goloka Vrindavan, in his most intimate private quarters. Kunti Devi says, Gopya Dade Tvayi Kritagasi Dhammatava Yate Dasasru Kalilanjana Sambramasakam Vatram Ninaya Vayabhavanaya Stitasya Samam Vamo Hayati Bir Apiyad Babeti. She explains, let me get that verse. We'll go through the word by words on it. Because it is quite astounding. Nope, back one. Remember how to do that? On the right. If you go down to the right, it'll give you that as an option. Yep. So, the coward lady, who is the gopi that that's speaking about, Yashoda Maya, that she took up Kritagasi because Krishna was causing a disturbance. She took up a rope, and at that time, Asru Kalaya, that Krishna, his eyes became flooded with tears. And understanding this is so mysterious. Therefore, janmakam chame divyam evam tatvati tatvata. If we understand, the deeper we understand these simple truths, in truth means in truth and deeply, then we become qualified to not be in the material world anymore. But it takes depth of understanding. So Krishna, the Supreme Lord, tears are filling his eyes when she picks up the rope to chastise him. And Vaktram and the Anjana, the cudgel on his eyes, because tears are coming to his eyes, starts running down his cheeks. Of course, this is the Damodar pastime. And then Vaktram, his face turns downward like this, because he's afraid. And Baya Bhavanaya, because he is afraid. Why is he afraid? Because his mother is angry at him. And she's going to chastise him because of that situation. And Kunti Devi looks at this and says, Samam, seeing this from Mohayati, I feel bewildered. How is that Supreme Lord who fear itself, which means Yamaraj, which means death, is afraid of him, he's afraid of his mother about being tied up with rope. So this is bewildering for the common citizens. Not that Kunti Devi was a common citizen, she was extraordinary devotee, but there are different levels of extraordinary devotees. And the devotees in Vrindavan, they have specific characteristics of their mood that allows them to be intimately connected with Krishna as Vrindavan leader. Their love is completely spontaneous. It's like a river that just flows to Krishna automatically, continuously, because the love is so dominant. So go on. So there are different levels, just like there are in the king's court. There are guards who are very intimate. They're allowed to be standing there with the king. And there are messengers who the king tells certain secrets. But then there's the intimate family members. So the nature of Vrindavan is that the people of Braja, their love for Krishna, their relationship with him is so intimate, they don't even think of him as the Supreme Lord. Practically speaking, they just think of him with mamata. He's mine. He's our village boy. You know, they were living in the same house with him. That's what it means, living in a village. Go on, Chaitan. Oh, yes, yes. No, I didn't see that. Go on for that. So here's the translation. My dear Krishna, Aditya, you read, please.
When you committed an offense and you perturbed eyes overflowed with tears which washed the mascara from your eyes, and you were afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me.
He was crying and he was afraid, and it is bewildering. So the different acharyas have commented, why is it bewildering? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says it's not because he's imitating the ways of an ordinary boy who is afraid of his mother's chastisement. It's because that's not the reason why Kunti Devi is bewildered, because if that was the case, she wouldn't be bewildered. She would know that he's imitating. But she's bewildered because that Supreme Lord is actually afraid. His consciousness, his mother's consciousness, is so loving that it is taken this all-powerful Supreme Lord, and he's assumed the mood of a young boy. And this Kunti Devi was bewildered by. How could the what's his consciousness like? Of course, we can't understand what Krishna's consciousness is like because we're tiny and he's unlimited. Go on. So what? So what principles govern Krishna's activities in Vrindavan? Go on, please. There's one verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Please repeat after me. Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye.
Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye.
Swarupa Purnata.
Swarupa Purnata.
That means that Krishna, his very nature, is full of aishwarya, opulence, and madhurya, sweetness, and karuna, mercy. But even more than that, and more than that is what dictates his activities in Vraja, in Vrindavan, is that he is bhakta vatsalya. And this is what makes him, endears him so much to the devotees. He loves his devotees. He loves his devotees. Up to the point, atma parjanta vadanyata, that he gives himself to his devotees. He places himself under the control of his devotees because their devotion, their love for him. Maybe you can open up the windows and some doors. Their devotion is so consuming. They care nothing about anything other than him and his pleasure. And a moment of separation from him, their heart breaks. This is the nature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. And it is so powerful that it completely controls Krishna. Go on. This is the translation. Krishna's transcendental qualities of opulence, sweetness, and mercy are perfect and full. As far as Krishna's affectionate leaning towards his devotees is concerned, he's so magnanimous. What does magnanimous mean? Generous of heart. He's so generous of himself. Maybe we could open up the door, please. Both doors. Thank you. That he can give himself to his devotees. He gives himself to his devotees. This is Krishna, the Supreme Personality, unlimitedly powerful, and universes come from his skin holes, and etc. He knows everything, he is everything. And he gives himself, he places himself under the control of his devotees completely. Because the devotees love him. And because, what would it take for you to place yourself completely under the control of another? That's why we all fear surrender so much. Why? It's because we're afraid to place ourselves under the control of another. Why? Now we're getting to personal, intimate questions here. What are we? Why? What's at the heart of it? Someone was going to answer there. Raise your hand, please. Yes.
Basically, we don't want to lose the control.
Why don't we want to lose the control? Raise your hand. Yes.
No.
You raised your hand. You have to answer now. I saw it. Everyone saw you raised his hand.
Yes, he did. Yes.
Gina, why? Why are we afraid of losing control? Yeah. Yes, and what emotion is there? Fear. We're afraid because we don't trust. But Krishna places himself. What to speak of us surrendering to him? He surrenders to his devotee. So he completely trusts his devotee. That is mysterious like anything. But it's very simple, because what makes you trust someone and gets removes the fear from the heart. Who said that? Okay. What do you mean, true love?
You are really loving God, but you don't want to fail.
Right, but let's take it the other way. What? You're truly in love with God, so there won't be any fear. Yes, yes, definitely. And how about the other way? If you are truly in love with God, you don't fear. But why? Let me ask it this way. Do you trust your mother? Okay. So in this analogy, of course, no one would say no. Well, some people in Kali Yuga, I mean, it's Kali Yuga after all. And you know, especially people talk about nowadays, these Western circles, people have issues, that's what they say, with their mother and their father after this happened and that happened and this happened and happened, because it didn't work out properly in their growing up relationship. But why would you place, why do you trust your mother? For example, especially when you were little. Because you know that she loves you so much. So it's not exactly our love of Krishna that causes us to trust him. It's his knowing, for having full confidence of his love of us. So that's why this type of understanding is so important. When we start to get a glimpse of how Krishna reciprocates with those who love him, it's yayatam mam prapadyante. It's reciprocal. But when we give ourselves to Krishna, he gives himself to us. Because he's ready, he's waiting. That's the point, because his love is there naturally. But it is important for us to understand Krishna's nature, otherwise how will we trust him? How can we develop love for him unless we understand him and who he is and what his nature is? That's the idea. So Krishna displays his Vrindavan Leela, and this will come up in some of the verses we'll hear. Krishna displays his Vrindavan Leela just to show this point, that he places himself under the control of his devotees. Because ordinary religionists don't understand this point. Even if they're so qualified, even if they're so pious, even if they're worshipping him in Vaikuntha, they don't understand this point, how Krishna places himself under the control of his devotees, and therefore Krishna displays his pastimes, these pastimes in Vrindavan. Okay, next. So Krishna is so great-hearted that he gives himself to his devotees. As a king, although in his palace, nevertheless remains the ruling king. So when the king is in the innermost part of his palace, he's still the king. He may have taken his crown off, but he still has all the power of a king. All he has to do is say, off with his head. Armies do this, armies do that. Award this person, even when he's in the innermost part of his palace. So Krishna, when he's at home, and where do we mean when we say at home? When he's in Vrindavan, he's always all-powerful. So because he's crying, when Mother Yasoda is chastising him, it doesn't mean that he's not all-powerful. So now we're going to talk some about a pastime. After Yasoda Mata punished Krishna by binding him, oh, there's a typo there. What's the typo? Which of the boys can see the typo, the mistake? Yes. I? You're not a mistake. I know what it is. The I thought himself big, but he's actually small. Yes? That's always the mistake. I never make any mistakes. By grinding him to a binding mortar. By binding him to a grinding mortar. So after Yasoda Mata, why did Yasoda punish him in this way? Because he had stolen, we saw a little of that, he had stolen butter because he was angry, because he wanted his mother to feed him. So he did that, and she chased him and chased him and chased him, and she caught him, and then she said, I'm going to teach you. It's such an amazing pastime, because this that takes place. Does anyone know a chapter in the 10th canto that takes place? What chapter does it take place?
Ten.
Very good. In the 10th chapter, excuse me, it's the 9th. I'm sorry. You were right, I was wrong. Again. And in the 8th chapter, Krishna had been stealing from all the neighbors. And they would come to Mother Yasoda and complain. And Yasoda Maya would take Krishna's side. Oh, you just don't like my boy. You have made up your mind. Your son, for some reason or another, maybe someone has put some tantra on you, and therefore you don't like my boy. And they say, no, we love him. And Krishna's just sitting there very innocently. I never stole any butter or anything like that. I never did anything. Mother Yasoda would say, oh, he just goes to your house because he likes you so much. And Krishna said, yes, I go there to play every morning out of my affection for them, and now they're criticizing me. I won't go anymore. And he was so naughty when he did this. And no one can be more naughty than Krishna. Not even some of our residents here. No one. He's unlimitedly naughty. And sometimes when he would be caught stealing butter, he would sometimes he would become afraid, and he would say, oh, please don't tell my mother. I promise you I'll never do it again until tomorrow. And sometimes he would just ignore him, ignore the people, and he'd just steal the butter right in front of him, and they'd go to Mother Yasoda and say, oh, your son Krishna, he's going to make you very wealthy one day. Now he's only stealing butter, but later on he's going to steal many jewels and others' wives. Mother Yasoda would say, oh, you're just envious him. And then Nanda Maharaj would come home, and Mother Yasoda would say, what happened today? How was Krishna today? And she would say, everyone was complaining about him. They came, they said he would steal butter, he did this and that, and he stole this, and Krishna, why are you stealing from him? Why are you doing this? And he lets out the calves when it's time for milking, and the calves drink all the milk, and then the householders have to go and collect the calves, otherwise they'll drink all the milk. And then while they're trying to collect all the calves, Krishna goes into their houses and steals butter. And he's done this and he's done that. And Krishna just goes over to Nanda Maharaj and he just hugs him and looks at him. And Nanda Maharaj says, why are you accusing Krishna of all these things? He's done nothing. He's such a good boy. And Krishna says over him, and looking at him, and hugs him around the neck, like it sits on his lap. And then Nanda Maharaj, of course, knows what's going on. And he says, don't you chastise Krishna. He never does anything wrong. He's innocent. And then Nanda Maharaj says to Krishna, because your mother criticizes you so much, you just stay on my lap all the time. You don't have to go to her anymore. And then immediately he pulls his hands from Nanda Maharaj's neck and runs to his mother and embraces her. So all these different exchanges of rasa, of sweet, loving mellows are going on, and the resonance of Vrindavan and Krishna are floating in an ocean of ecstasy, floating and diving and swimming in an ocean of sweetness due to Krishna and Krishna's loving dealings. This is what goes on in the private quarters of the king. He has loving dealings with those who love him the most. And that's what goes on in Vrindavan. So Mother Yashoda tied him to a grinding mortar because she was afraid. Krishna said, if you punish me, I'm going to run to the forest and I'll never come back. So she said, oh, this boy is so independent. So I'll tie him so he doesn't run away. So she tied him to the grinding mortar, and Krishna is crying. And Mother Yashoda tells the boys to stand around him to protect him and make sure he's okay. And he's crying. And then Mother Yashoda goes away, and Krishna starts laughing because he's in a new experience. And Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So he and his friends are all laughing, and they're playing, and they're joking. So Krishna starts crawling and pulling the grinding mortar from one side of the road to the other side of the road, and the boys are playing and he's laughing. And he pulls it to one house, one of the ladies' houses who had donated her rope, and says, go steal from that house. So the boys would go from one house to the next, stealing more butter and causing mischief, and then laughing and playing like that. And then Krishna sees in front of him what? What does he see? Two, we call them Jamal Arjun tree. Jamal means they're twin. Arjun tree. Has anyone seen an Arjun tree? Yes, you probably. If you've been to Govardhan, you've seen them. Now they label the trees around Govardhan. There are Arjun trees there. Have you noticed that? That's due for enough time for another visit. So Arjun trees are there. They grow, if I remember correctly, that they can grow 30, 40 feet high. But these were old. They were ancient. And Krishna pulled the grinding mortar in between and go on to the next one. And oops, go back to the last one. We don't want you to remember that. Forget that. What are you supposed to forget again? It's how do you forget something? Because you have to think about it to forget it. So Krishna pulled down the trees, and what's amazing, these trees were huge. And what's really amazing is that the rope was just the hair, the rope that Mother Yashoda and the ladies were used to bind their hair, and they were pulling rope from different houses. So what's amazing, the huge trees fell down, but the rope didn't break. Because the rope was tied by the affection of Mother Yashoda, and Krishna couldn't untie it. He couldn't break the bonds of the affection of Mother Yashoda. Because that's what binds everyone in this world. What to speak of this world being a reflection of the spiritual world. It's affection that binds. It binds Krishna, and therefore it binds us. And Mother Yashoda's affection was so strong, he couldn't break it. And the trees fell down. And the sound of the trees falling was so loud that it stunned all the residents of Vrindavan for one muhurta, 48 minutes. And they couldn't move. And the coward boys, they didn't become stunned. and fall unconscious like the other residents of Vrindavan. But they just stared at Krishna and what was going to happen, because they were completely stunned by the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. They were stunned and couldn't move, because they were captured, their hearts, that's a symptom of ecstasy. Their hearts were captured by Krishna's pastimes and its sweetness, and they didn't move, but they observed what was going on. And what was going on, now we can go on to the next one. Now you can remember what you just forgot. Look at cute Krishna, and the two, this is the 10th chapter, and we're going to speak about the 11th chapter. Two effulgent Upadevatas, like demigods, they were sons of Kuvera, who's associated with Lord Shiva. They came out and they offered prayers to Krishna. Now I wanted, they offered prayers in 8 verses, and I'll give you a very brief summary of what they said in 8 verses. Because, no, I won't tell you because, I'll read them, the summaries. This is their summaries. You are everything. This is what they said to Krishna. And remember, there he is, as a little boy, still tied up to the grinding mortar, crawling. They said, you are everything within the universe. There is nothing that is separate from you. Adishtya, manashtya, visha, upasevate. Everything is Krishna. Nothing is separate from you. You control everything, because it is you who is the super soul. They recognize this Krishna as this one. And you existed before the creation. So who can know you? You are everything, and you are the supreme Brahman. You are the all-pervading spiritual truth. And therefore we offer you our respectful obeisances. And you, now and in all your incarnations, have a transcendental body. So even though Krishna's body appears to be limited, in other words, only this tall and not unlimitedly tall, and this is the main point that the impersonalists say, which is more or less everyone, practically speaking, is that how could God have a form and be a person that would limit him? But that's a material way of looking at things, because if you say that the transcendental unlimited Lord can't have a form, that would be limiting. You're not allowed to have a form, because I can't conceive of an unlimited form, therefore you can't have a form. That's limiting him by our limitations, our inability. So, you are the supreme Brahman, and your body is transcendental. It is beyond our conception. It is achintya, inconceivable. And we have been able to see you face to face by the mercy of Narada Muni. But then they said, amazingly enough, I always wondered why they said this next. They said, please, let us depart. Give us permission to now leave and go to our homes. There they were, seeing Krishna, knowing who he was, and they wanted to leave. Why? Why? Was that a raised hand? Yes.
I think it was
They weren't in the right consciousness to be there, because they had demigod consciousness. The Brijbasis don't pray in this way. They had demigod consciousness. So to be in Vrindavan, we have to have not Aussie consciousness, not Indian consciousness, not demigod consciousness, but we have to have Vrindavan consciousness. Love, spontaneous love, filled with love, like the residents of Vrindavan have. and not even attracted or enamored by the incredible potency of Krishna, but just completely in love with him in their special mood. Otherwise, we'll be quite uncomfortable there. And not only that, we'll try to be there for... we can't be there, but if we were there, we would be there and try to get something out of it for me. So until... so what keeps us from being in the spiritual world is our lack of proper consciousness. And the instant that we have proper consciousness, we're there. So how did they get to see Krishna face to face? By the grace of Narada Muni, they say, and please allow us to again depart to our homes. And Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this verse. So he says, what else they were desiring? Please make us the servants of Narada. We are servants of Lord Shiva, who is your devotee. Let us also serve Narada, since by his mercy we got to see you. Or let us be servants of your followers at all times. Or allow us to be servants of the cowards, because as trees they had witnessed all these pastimes. Or allow us to make us servants and keep us always in that position. We want nothing other than to be a servant of the different levels of your followers. So this is the consciousness, the basic consciousness that has to be developed. And what has to be removed is the master consciousness, which is Ishwaraham Mahambhogi Siddhaham Balavansukhi. This is the consciousness of everyone who has a false ego. In other words, everyone who's in a material body in the material world is subtly or grossly trying to exploit the material nature for themselves. Regardless of how good a person is, seems to be, everyone is doing it because I'm in the center. So the opposite of that is developing the mood of loving service. So he said, they're begging for that, and when we've developed that, we can come back. So they're asking for that benediction. We aspire for that, and keep us in that position. Not that we're trying to be servants to gain something later on, but let us always be servants. Keep us in that position. We aspire for that, since we have attained what is unattainable, though we are the greatest offenders. And then the final verse in their prayer. So they're aware of who Krishna is. And the point being is that even when Krishna is in Vrindavan and he's crying, he's still the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead and all powerful. So that point we should keep in mind, because that makes Krishna's playing these pastimes, his Leela, so attractive, because we see how we try to understand why is he acting in this way? Why is the unlimited Lord acting in this way? And it's because of the love that he reciprocates with, the love that his devotees have for him. So their final prayer is, from now on, may all our words describe your pastimes. May our ears engage in hearing your glories. May our hands and legs and other senses engage in actions pleasing to you. And may our minds always think of your lotus feet. May our heads offer our obeisances to everything within this world, because all things are your different forms. And may our eyes see the forms of Vaishnavas who are none different from you. So their prayer was just somehow, can we serve you continuously? And this, when I heard this part about the, let me offer obeisances to everything in existence, because nothing is different from you, I was reminded why Vaishnavas don't kick people and don't touch things with their feet or move things with their feet. You know, that's I know I grew up with that habit when it's so much easier than bending down. You just move it with your feet. Of course, you don't have that habit. But this is why devotees don't do that. They take the trouble to bend down, even though it's a little inconvenient, because they respect everything in its relationship to Krishna. And therefore, because they see it in relationship to Krishna, they don't touch it with their feet and kick it. Of course, we still have to walk on the ground. What to do? So, Krishna was still tied up to the mortar when they finished their prayers, and then they left. And then the Brijvasis came. After Nalakuvera and Manigriva departed, the residents of Vrindavan arrived, because they had woken from their 48 minutes of being stunned and fainting due to the loud sound. So here's a point we had made. And then they arrived, and that's where we're going to begin reading some verses. But amazingly, Krishna pulled down the huge trees, but the rope had remained unbroken. Why? Why? Raise your hands. Why? You didn't raise your hand, but you got the right answer. But why? Why? If you know the answer, raise your hand. I won't call on everyone, don't worry. I'm such a bad teacher. No one learned what I said. I'll have to say it again. Raise your hand if you know why the rope didn't break. I will call on one representative. Yes, why?
I'm binding love of Mother Yashoda.
Yes, she had tied the rope. And we'll hear soon who was the only person who could untie it. Does anyone know who it will be? Yes. Yes, but no. She definitely could have. Who ended up untying it? Nanda Maharaj, because their love was on an equal level. Okay, go on. So that's, yes, because the ropes had been tied by the affection of Mother Yashoda, Yashoda Mata. Okay, that's the end of part two. Now, what time is it? 12:35, and we're going to go to 1 o'clock. Exactly. Are you ready for one more part, for part three?
Yes.
And then part four? Because there's eight parts. We're not going to be able to finish them all, I think. Maybe we can. But okay. Is everyone fully awake?
Yes.
C.C. Radhabalava ki.
Yes.
I didn't hear you say anything. Are you angry at me or something? What's your name?
Surya.
Surya, wow. How old are you? I bet you do well in school. Is that true? I could tell. Very intelligent. How much is... What's the square root of the dividend of 5 times 64? See? He's also humble. That's very hard to say. I don't know. Did you ever notice that? Thank you, sir. Okay, now part three begins, Krishna willing. One never knows when one's dealing with technology. No. It was just, all you had to do is push the little button. This is Krishna giving us a little break. When you push it up a little bit and see, well, you can do it. You can move it by the indicator on the left. No, that's too far. Too far. Too far. Too far. Too far. Much too far. Go start at the other end. We need... Okay, go forward. Yes. Yes, go forward. Yes, go forward. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay, now hit the space bar. End of part two. Now hit the space bar. And again. Part three. Nandamaraj unties the unlimitedly powerful Lord. Now, how the unlimitedly powerful Lord is tied, and that's what Mother Yasoda, what was so difficult for her, she saw two inconsistencies, and she was amazed and bewildered because her son's waist was this big, and it didn't grow any bigger, and no matter how much rope she added, it was still two fingers too short. So her son didn't grow any, and the amount stayed the same, no matter how much she added. So this is Krishna's inconceivable potency. But once she tied him, he couldn't break it. Even Balaram, Krishna actually asked Balaram to come and untie him. And because it was tied by Mother Yashoda, Balaram wouldn't untie it either. Balaram was so angry first. Who has tied you up? I will destroy the universe. And then the boy said, Mother Yashoda. And he said, oh. Krishna, why are you so naughty all the time? You always do things all the time. Okay. Now here we're going to move to the Aditya Prabhu. Could you read that, please? One, two, six. But we won't do 1-6 all at once. We'll do text one first. Okay. So here is the first verse. Well, let me get out my little papers here. Please repeat after me. Sri Shuku Vacha.
Sri Shuku Vacha.
Gopananda Daya Sutva.
Gopananda Daya Sutva.
Drumayo Patito Ravam. Tatra jagmu kuru shrestha.
Tatra jagmu kuru shrestha.
Nirgata baya sankitaha.
Nirgata baya sankitaha.
Gopavindas Prabhu, what words? Do you know what this verse means? Huh? Say again. Yes, say roughly. Go do the word by words roughly.
Covered by Sananda Maharaj, hearing the trees falling.
Yeah, the covered men actually. Yeah, the gopas, not the boys.
They are right. They are right.
Yes.
Could you say that everything?
Yes.
I think it's fear.
They were so afraid of that sound. So just for a moment, think of what the cowherd men went through. Who did they love? This is what it means to be in Vrindavan. You have no other thought other than Krishna. Now every parent knows when you're thinking part of when your children are out away from your sight. You're always in anxiety about them. So they're always thinking about their children. So that everyone in Vrindavan was always thinking about Krishna, in, according to their rasa in different ways. But they were always thinking about Krishna. So suddenly, there's this huge sound, like the crashing of a thunderbolt, sankita, like the crashing of a thunderbolt, and they become stunned. It's so loud they become stunned. And as soon as they come back to consciousness, what's the first thing that's in their mind? Raise your hand, raise your hand, raise your hand. Yes. Krishna. Because there have been so many demons. There's been, who was the demon right before this that Krishna killed? There was Trinavarta and Sakatasura and Putana. So immediately they're afraid of Krishna, for Krishna's welfare, and they go running in the direction of the sound. All the coward men come, and Mother Yasoda comes because she's just tied Krishna up, and they see the trees are falling, and at first the different acharyas explain sometimes a little differently. Krishna is covered by the branches because the tree has fallen, so they can't see him. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Is he all right? And in the material world, this is a kind of misery, the anxiety, but in the spiritual realm, this is vyabhichari bhav. This is one of the ecstasies that are based on rati, on the stiva, if you've studied your Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Because this is what's required to generate rasa, all these different activities, the incredible sweetness that makes a big wave in the ocean of ecstasy. It's all about Krishna, and ecstasy is caused. And they come running there. Next. Here's the translation. Please read it. Aditya, Prabhu.
Sukadeva Goswami continued, O Maharaj Parikshit, when the Yamuna Arjuna trees fell, all the cowherd men in the neighborhood, hearing the fierce sound and fearing thunderbolts, went to the spot.
So they went there. The only people who didn't faint, practically speaking, were the coward boys, who were stunned by the sweetness of Krishna's pastime. Next. There, when they arrived, they saw the fallen Jamal Arjuna trees on the ground. Why? They thought, how did this happen? They were bewildered. Because even though they could directly perceive that the trees had fallen, they could not trace out the cause. How did this happen, they thought. One of them thought, oh, I know what happened. The trees, it must be rotten due to white ants or termites or something, and they've fallen down. But then they saw that everything was hard, the trunk was hard. They thought, why? How could this have happened? How did they fall? There's been no thunderbolts. There's no people around who could have knocked them over. And even if there was people, why would someone do this? What has happened here? So, they first couldn't see Krishna. And next verse, they would, at this point they didn't know what had happened. Krishna, then they saw that Krishna was bound by the rope to the ulukala, the mortar, which he was dragging. But how could he have pulled down the trees? They couldn't figure it out. He couldn't have done it, because they were so much in love with him, they weren't aware, like the Nalakuvera and Manigriva, of his power. Because you don't, if they thought that Krishna was all powerful, they wouldn't have any fear, and then they wouldn't have the ecstasy of the rasa. So by Yogamaya's mercy, their knowledge is covered. So to make their love stronger, so that Krishna enjoys their love. This is what's going on in Vrindavan all the time. So they're thinking, who had done this? How has this happened? Who has done it? Next. This is the remainder of the verse. Where was the source for this incident? Considering all these astounding things, the coward men were doubtful and bewildered. Then all the little coward boys who were there, the little gopas, They said, it is Krishna who has done it. And they were so stunned by their own ecstasy, they didn't even say, Krishna pulled down the trees. They just said, he did it. And they explained how. When he was in between the two trees, the mortar fell crosswise and in between the two trees, and then Krishna dragged the mortar and the two trees fell down. It sounds very much like the boys are just talking, making up something, imagining something. And after that, they continued, two beautiful men came out of the trees. And we have seen this with our own eyes. They volunteered the information. The coward men were all standing around the trees and they were talking, how has this happened? And the coward boy said, we'll tell you what happened. Krishna became, he pulled it, and then two shining men came out and they said something to Krishna for some time and then they just left. And most of the coward men thought, but they said, we have seen this with our own eyes. Let me just see if there's anything. So the boys, they too were just completely captivated by the sweetness of Krishna and the pastime. Go on. And because of intense paternal affection, the cowherd men, headed by Nanda, could not believe that Krishna could have uprooted the trees in such a wonderful way. So this is the speciality or the depth of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Even when confronted by Krishna's unlimited power, his Aishwarya, it doesn't stop them. It doesn't diminish their love for him in the slightest. Different from Devaki and Vasudev, who when they understood that Krishna was the Supreme Lord, that he had four arms, and that he had just killed Kamsa later, their love for him became diminished. And they became filled with awe and reverence. So their love, like Kunti's love, is considered on a slightly lower platform. Not that we in any way say they don't have love for Krishna or anything like that. But this shows the speciality of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Yashoda Mata, the coward boys, Nandaraj, the elderly gopis, the younger gopis, Sudam, Sridam, Vasudam, and another coward boy's name? Madhu Mangal, Sudam, Dam, so many, Stoka Krishna, Arjun, so many, is that no matter what Krishna did, their love for him didn't diminish the slightest bit. Their love overwhelmed any knowledge of who Krishna was. This is the speciality of Krishna. But so Nanda Maharaj could not believe that Krishna had uprooted the trees in such a wonderful way. Therefore, the cowherd men could not put their faith in the words of the boys. But some of the men, however, were in doubt, since Krishna was predicted to equal Narayan, because Gaugacharya had said, Narayano samo gunai, this boy will be equal in qualities to Lord Narayan. They thought, possibly he could have done it. He's done so many amazing things, he could have done it. But the other cowherd men in Nanda Maharaj, no. Look at him. He steals butter. And when he doesn't get his way, he cries. No, not Krishna. And when Nanda Maharaj saw his own son bound with ropes to the wooden mortar and was dragging it, he smiled. He smiled because he didn't want Krishna to feel any fear that he was in a dangerous situation. Everything in Vrindavan is based on what is going to give Krishna pleasure, based on the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. So he smiled because he didn't want Krishna to be in anxiety, or I'm in a fearful situation. So he smiled to let Krishna know that everything is all right, there's no problem. And Krishna smiled and returned, because he didn't want his father to feel that he was in any anxiety or anything like that. And Nanda Maharaj, being on equal level to Yashoda, he could release Krishna by untying the ropes, and no one else could do it. Okay, that's the end of part three. Are there any questions or comments up to this part? Questions or comments? Yes. It comes by naturally by the increase of love in a specific mood. And it's not that they don't know, but it's not dominant in their mind. Because love is what's dominant, and caring for their welfare. Because Mother Yashoda couldn't tie him up if she thought that he's the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example that I always remember, or that I always think of, is like, say, the richest person that we think of is no longer the richest person in the world, I was told, by the way. But we think of, say, Bill Gates or something like that. He's so wealthy. And if he would walk in here, I always use the same example, we would all smile, we would offer him a seat, and we'd all say, would you like something to eat? And we'd all be smiling and welcoming him, and we'd all be thinking how we're going to get some money out of him. Which is how people generally approach God. We offer something to him, we offer a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or this or that, and we're thinking what we can get. How can we satisfy us? But his mother, for example, when dealing with him, she may know he's so wealthy, but when she's dealing with him, she's thinking, oh, are you getting enough to eat? You're working so hard. You know, are you taking time for this? Are you taking time for your family? Are you getting enough to eat? You're looking a little thin. Make sure you don't get sick. She's forgetting all the rest because of the nature of the relationship. So it's not like she has to try to forget it, that he's the wealthy person. It's sort of there. She knows that he's so wealthy, that the interest of his interest of the interest of the interest of the interest she knows everything, but she doesn't think in that way because of the nature of the loving relationship. Because that's what's dominant. So it's all very natural. Is that all right? Yes.
How does the consciousness of being helpless makes one magnanimous? Because we saw you define that word that is magnanimous, but when we are asked to approach God,
He's magnanimous.
He's magnanimous, right? What I'm saying is, like, when we pray or whenever we do a service, the mood should be that we should be helpless, right? Unless we have that mood that, what should I say, that mercy won't come in.
Why?
Because, we still think that we can still control things.
Yes, so there's it's natural, because as long as we think we can, just wait, we'll get to your question. I know that we haven't touched your question yet. As long as we think that we can control things and we don't, we have our own resources, so to speak, it doesn't pull on Krishna's need to take care of us, despite us having a relationship. But as soon as our mood becomes, who can help me if you don't help me, then that, when it's true and when it's filled with love, that pulls on Krishna's heart. How can I not help my devotee? He's depending on me, he's calling on me, because he's a person. He's a person, he's not an imperson. He's a person. It's natural. Now, what's the point that you were making about magnanimity of heart?
Yeah, the question was basically, I mean, when we are acting, or when the mood is of helplessness, isn't it that we are still asking for ourselves? And you know the example that we just gave of meditation, we are becoming selfish here. Isn't helplessness also being selfish to some degree?
No, being helpless isn't being selfish. Helpless is just being helpless. I can't do anything unless you're kind to me. I'm just dependent upon you. This is what surrender means. Essentially, goptipte varanam tata. You are my maintainer, you are my protector, you are my guardian. And whatever you give me, however you choose to deal with me, I accept. That's what surrender means. I accept it as your mercy. That's what surrender means. So if someone feels himself helpless, I cannot do this by myself, and he says, could you get me a new Mercedes-Benz? So that's not pure devotional service, and that's not surrender, but that's a person who has a particular type of piety, who considers God his order supplier. So that's not what goes on in Vrindavan. But another issue comes up. What happens if a person who is surrendered to Krishna is in an emergency situation, and he calls out naturally, Krishna is his protector, and he naturally calls out, Krishna, save me! Krishna, save me! Is that against the principles of pure devotional service? And the answer is no. This has been described by Srila Rupa Goswami with Anyabila Sita, the word, as opposed to Anyabilas, no desire. But in emergency situations, naturally the devotee is going to call out to Krishna. Mahaprabhu set that example, Krishna, Rakshamam, Pahimam. And that is not, it is natural. It is not against the principles of pure devotional service. But one other point I'd like to say, that you mentioned that Krishna's heart is magnanimous, because we were talking about that before. But when the devotee, when he surrenders to Krishna, does his heart become magnanimous? Now that's interesting. Now why would his heart become magnanimous? Raise your hand if you would like to say something on this point. Why naturally would the devotee's heart become magnanimous? Magnanimous means, okay, without pulling out your iPhone and checking out the online dictionary, magnanimous means again? Generous hearted, very, very bharanaya, namo maha bharanaya, generous, giving. And what's the opposite of that? Miserly and selfish, another word for stingy. Okay, so the easiest way to understand the answer to the question is, what makes the heart stingy and miserly and selfish? Huh? Okay, material attachment. What else? unlimited desires.
I mine.
What else?
Bondage.
Absence of love, hardness of heart, and fear also. I don't have enough for me. I'm not going to be well taken care of. So I want to, yes.
Greed.
Why does one get greedy? Of course, none of you would know, even have any idea, without the online dictionary to tell us. But why does one get greedy? Wait. That wasn't the question. Was everyone greedy or not? But why does one get greedy? But greed means. But why does one get greedy?
He feels
that
whatever he has, you know, is not enough.
It's not enough. Yeah, it's not. A lot of fear. That's the essential quality of being in the material world. I'm not going to get enough unless I accumulate more and more. And how much, of course, is enough that I won't be fearful anymore? What does it take? So when we talk about what the cause of the material qualities, which are the essential qualities of having a false ego, this is what happens when we have a false ego. It's easy to understand if one is in real ego, his real identity, as Gopi Bharata Parakamalaya Dasa Dasa Nadas, servant of Krishna, then one is, because it's, the heart is naturally magnanimous. And when we all are magnanimous, and it happens, we feel so much better than when we're hard and tight in our hearts. It's natural to be giving. It's natural to be trusting. It's natural to be faithful and clean-hearted. And the rest is artificially imposed upon the poor suffering soul by the material energy. And oh, how much we suffer due to these things. They are ropes. They tie us. They bind us. They restrict us. At least that's my experience of it. They cause misery. Not we become greedy because we want to accumulate so we can be free. But rather we become, so we can do what we want. But rather we become more tied and tight and bound. And if we just actually trusted Krishna, we act practically, but trust Krishna, then so much of our anxiety goes away instantaneously. Is your question answered? Okay. And what's the time now?
1:05.
Uh-oh. Then we should go for 3 more minutes, so at least we get to 1:08. And then we'll stop. Does anyone have a 3-minute question? Yes.
If unconditional love is all about pleasing the object of that love, then why... you know, if it's completely selfless, it's completely just about making Krishna happy, and disregarding your own desires, then why did the Brijbasis get so upset when they saw Krishna leaving with Krura?
Why did the Brijbasis get upset when they're only interested in Krishna? And another question in the same light is, why did when Mahaprabhu wanted to go to Vrindavan, Maharaj Prataparudra and Savabhoma Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy, they tricked him in so many ways not to get him to go. Yes? Same question, yes?
Yes, so why didn't they also just go with him and leave Vrindavan if that's what Krishna wanted to do?
Why didn't they go with him is another question, but why? What explains their activity? It's just the nature of spontaneous love. It's just not theoretical. They loved him so much they couldn't tolerate the thought of him leaving. because there was no, even though he said, I'm coming right back, possum, they couldn't tolerate it. It's just the nature of spontaneous love. It's not theoretical. It's just the way love is. When they would blink, they would curse Brahma as being a terrible creator by not making the proper eyes that don't blink when in front of Krishna. So what to speak of him getting on a chariot and leaving? It all came out then. You know how they were standing in front of the chariot. You know, they were so angry at Akrur. What to do when there's love like that? How can we understand it? We can't understand it, but we can hear a little bit and think, wow, this is wonderful. This is wonderful. And what to speak of it being all in relationship to Krishna. And the rasa that's generated from that, you know, we can't glimpse it. But we can get an understanding that the taste of this rasa, the sweetness of having an awakened relationship with Krishna must be so great that persons who are historical persons that we know of, like, we start with Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srinivasacharya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the six Goswamis, they prefer to wander around with no possessions, just begging Krishna with their hands in the air, Hey Radhe, Raja Devake, that's the life they wanted, because they, so, you know, we fall at all these great personages' feet and beg for a glimpse of what they're relishing. You know, that's all we can do. We can get some, you know, from a distance, some idea of what it must be like. We can read their writings and see what's going on inside to make them act like that outside. Okay, what's the exact time to the minute? Our official timekeeper, Saneshwar?
9 plus 1.
Yeah, what's the extra 1 minute for? 108 and?
Mahaprasad,
yes. Oh. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Shri Radhabalava ki jai, Shri Shri Radhabalava Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Shri Sai Nithai Gaur ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai.